here we are, we somehow or another there was, I guess, a miscommunication or something with Suddhodani, and we lost him as a translator this week. But because we have a community, there is a group of us, we were able to make an adjustment. Now that is a very, very important point. If we didn't have a community, I would just have to talk in English and most people wouldn't be able to understand. But because we do have a community, even though it was a little difficult to arrange it, we were able to correct the situation. Now life is changing all the time. Things transform unexpectedly. You may have been depending on a certain situation, you may have been depending on things being a certain way, but that can transform instantly. Now, it's impossible to prepare for every transformation in reality. I know that some people have dedicated their lives to trying to contradict all difficulties that will come to them. There is a group of people, I know in America at least, probably they exist in other places, they're called survivalists. A survivalist is a person who's simply thinking about survival. It's a person who keeps stocks of food, has many guns and ammunition for any enemy, has got sources of fire and power and everything you can imagine, stocks of medicine. So it's a person who is trying to make every possible future plan for every possible future occurrence that could be there. Now, I understand that. I understand that mentality. I appreciate the foresight. But I also know that it is absolutely not possible to prepare for every single thing that will occur. No matter what you try to do, there will always be something or other which disturbs you. For example, if you store all kinds of medicines, you'll at one point get a disease which you don't have medicine for and it can kill you. Or you can buy so much food and have so much food stored, but the food you have stored can be eaten by animals or it can go rotten or something can happen. So there are very many situations which can cause difficulty and trouble that are far beyond our capacity to predict. And at that time, one can start to understand the value of community. A community of people who care about each other, which is basically the bottom line definition of community, is the most valuable asset for the future. Because when you've got community like that, you have the possibility to overcome all kinds of difficulties that you could never prepare for. So community is an extremely important thing. I mean, when you have community, you can adjust things. You can adjust any situation. Whatever the situation is, whatever the difficulty is that you're facing, you can deal with it. Now, the worst thing is when you don't have somebody to turn to. You don't have somebody you can depend on. Now you may have remembered that I have been so, not very interested in taking up some kind of like leadership role within some group, spiritually especially. But after my visit to Russia, I realized that, well, that role is not necessary. What really is happening is that people get to come together and meet together when there's a reason to do so. So I became kind of like an excuse for people to get together and meet with each other and talk to each other and have fun together. And I like that. I mean, I'm like that too. I like to have an excuse to get together with people and do something where we feel connected. No matter what situation you're in, you can always work it out. You can make some adjustment. You can do something. There are many situations of war which destroyed totally the infrastructure of a community. Yet somehow or another, people got together, worked together, and made things function again so that they could go on. Therefore, you can never underestimate the value of community. Now, when we speak about war or something like that, like Germany after the war, or England or Russia or wherever, this was a community that was just everybody, because everybody was affected equally. But that is not something that is relevant in everyday life. It is also not something to disregard, because it is something that keeps us alive whenever there's a natural disaster or some other catastrophe that we can't deal with alone. But in day-to-day life, we need to have something more than this kind of emergency mode. We need to have some support. Support means, for example, when there is a need to have support. Kalamala, you can disconnect from St. Petersburg right now. Okay, so when you need support, there are many ways in which we need support. We need support, for instance, emotionally. We need support mentally. We need support physically. Sometimes we have disasters in our own family or something which gives us great grief. We need friends to give us a hug or to assist us. In India, I know there's a very interesting system amongst businessmen where when a new business is about to start, or a new, shall we say, a young man is about to enter into the business world, they help him start. They give support, they give encouragement, they give money, they give loans, they give places. Because they have connections, they have these feelings to support their community. If somebody's house is destroyed from fire or something, everybody gets together, gives them some place to stay, gives them food, gives them shelter, gives them clothes. Now, I saw when I was there in St. Petersburg in Moscow that there was a good mood amongst people who got together in groups where they could associate with each other and be friendly with each other. And I also saw a very interesting thing in my own situation is we had a party on the last night in St. Petersburg, and I was able to play music with some guys. And it was a lot of fun. It was an experience for me which was very important, because I could share with others in a very creative way. So this kind of interaction can only happen when you're able to be together with people in a community. Now, a very interesting thing. I talked to my cousin the other day. He lives in New York City. And I always ask him and I ask others how your social life is doing. I ask him and I ask others who live in New York always, how's your social life doing? And I always get the same answer and I always laugh. Now just consider, this city has 15 million people in it. And just if you expand a little bit outside the city limits, you've got 25 million people living in that very close area. In fact, there's people on top of people all the time. Only people who live in Moscow can understand this to some extent. But he always tells me, he says, it's so hard to meet anybody here. Isn't that hysterical? I mean, you're in a place of 25 million people, and it's so hard to meet anybody. Everybody's so busy. They're all working. They're going here. They're going there. They have no time to be together. Everybody goes home. They go into their flats and all their different places. Then they go to work. They go to their offices and all their little places. And generally, if people want to meet people, they have to do it in an artificial environment, kind of like you have to go to a club, even though you may not like music. You have to drink, even though you don't like to drink. You have to be in this environment that you may not like, just so that you can get together with others and meet people. But when you meet people under this environment, you're simply seeing people the way they want you to see them, the way they're trying to present themselves to you. So it is very difficult to be in a natural situation of interaction and meeting people. Therefore, communities of people who have the same kind of interest are very, very essential for regular life, normal life, like communities of people who have certain interests which are similar, like cooking, places where people absorb themselves in cooking together, or people absorb themselves in sewing together, or maybe art together, or something. We are very lucky because we have this spiritual community. And we can get together and we can associate in a way which we all feel very comfortable with. But at the same time, if we're only communicating virtually like this, it's not really the same. But when you can get together with others in your own area, physical people, where you can physically and emotionally and mentally and spiritually support each other, it's so much more satisfying. If you look at every organized religion, their spirituality, of course, is the core of what they are doing. But they have many other activities which are simply the organization of their community. They play bingo together. They have some parties together. They have picnics together. They do charities together. They have programs for their children. They have programs which are interesting for them. And in all kinds of ways, they have very, very interesting programs and situations which allow them to gather together, to feel comfortable together, to feel happy together, and to do things which make them feel that they are part of a larger group. Now, groups aren't good because they help us to do things we wish to do. They help us by supporting us. They give us a feeling of security. Humans are social animals. We are people who like to associate with other people. But the problem comes when we place restrictions or we place demands within these group environments. And one has to wonder, to what extent are demands or expectations or requirements amongst groups simply the way it goes in this world? Which means it's just the way it is. You're going to have that. You can't avoid it. You cannot avoid having restrictions and demands in this world, perhaps. This is the question. Is it required that this is part of life? What has to be examined is the parameters, the methodology by which interaction takes place in a group. Now, the reason we talk about this, obviously, is because in our particular network, we don't really have any requirements. I was speaking with somebody in Moscow who kept asking me, well, what are your principles? What is your process? And I was answering in very broad terms because I was trying to give as much individual freedom as possible. But this person was insisting, but that's so vague. There is nothing that one should do. In other words, this person was saying that there must be standards, otherwise things are confused. And so then I was becoming like, well, I don't have that. I've never given that. And then this person was saying that he told me, I want to associate with you, but I don't like the people around you, because they don't follow any particular standard. They say anything they want. They do anything they want. And it's true. I've never said, and neither would anybody have to listen to me if I did, you should do this or you should do that. I don't care what you do and what you don't do. I only care that we have a nice, loving, personal relationship. And then I thought later on about his comment that, well, I have a trouble associating with you because of the people around you. And his implication was that if they all followed some principles, I wouldn't have this trouble. I remember when I was in ISKCON and everybody followed so-called these principles. And there were so many standards that one had to meet. And I was in the same situation. I liked to be with Prabhupada, but I couldn't stand the people around him. I thought some of them were extremely strange, neurotic, some of them insane. And the people I liked the most always got driven out of ISKCON some way or another by this group of people. So here is this guy in Moscow implying to me that if I would only control these people around me with some kind of rules, regulations, standards, and principles, he would be able to associate with me. And I was wondering about that. I mean, isn't it interesting how we feel that if everybody were to follow the same thing, then we would be able to have good personal relationships? If everybody were to follow the same personalities, if everybody were to think the same or to act the same, there would be harmony in the group. But that naturally, that doesn't happen. So then one can say that therefore one has to give up all personal interest, because it's the personal interest that we have in ourselves and what we do that causes the dissension, the disturbances amongst each other. The idea is this, that if you don't have personal interest, then you would not have disturbance, because everybody would be focused towards the Supreme, towards gurus, towards authorities. And therefore, if you set your sights to focusing far away, to the higher realms, then all of these problems here will work themselves out. But it doesn't work like that. It is not the way in reality it really is. If you have a group where there are no standards, or you have a group where there every single little aspect of your life has a standard to it, the problems are the same. It doesn't matter if it's this religion, that religion, or another religion. It doesn't matter if it's this nationality, that one or the other one. This is the nature of the human being. The human being is a complex social creature. And in these interactions, so many considerations are there. In fact, one of the major considerations in interactions with others is how others see you. And in fact, even more importantly, how you think others see you. And according to this perception, we find comfort or we become uncomfortable in others' associations. We find it difficult to be around others who just don't like to be around us. And the perfect combination is when you're comfortable with another and the other is comfortable with you. So even if you have a group where everybody kind of agrees that, you know, what we're doing here is nice, it doesn't necessarily, I mean, in any way that the interactions of the individuals will be comfortable. So therefore, you will always have difficulties in groups. And these difficulties sometimes can be very severe. And these severe difficulties can make one say, I don't want to be in a group anymore. One can find that this group, that group, other groups, it's always the same thing, I'm going to stand alone. And then one has to deal with loneliness and live with loneliness for some time. And at the point it becomes no longer tolerable to reach out for others and maybe find one or two or maybe a group and start the cycle over and over again. This continuous cycle of having groups, being frustrated, going alone, again coming to a group, then coming alone and going to a group. This is the whole cycle of our evolution. And according to our interest, according to our requirement, we migrate to different groups. And for those who have something spiritual, they feel very deeply they should be involved in spiritual activities, they migrate from spiritual group to spiritual group. Now let's think about that, in that fundamental problem people have with other people. how we think others think about us. Now, when we feel like that, just turn it around and look at another person from that point of view. This other person considers very important how we think about them, or how they think we think about them. So one of the main things we can do to improve the group interaction is to appreciate other persons, listen to them, to acknowledge them, to support them, to be of service to them. Because ultimately it all boils down to that. Why does everyone like God? Because we think, what? Because we think that God acknowledges us, God appreciates us, God supports us, and because of that, God is our friend. Now, if we were to take that understanding and apply it universally to other living entities, we can really make a very big evolutionary step. If you think for a second why everybody likes groups that have leaders, it's because they think the leader is giving them support by appreciating them, acknowledging them, and being of service to them. Because it's something we fundamentally want. I would even go so far as to say this is at the very basis of our spirituality. And I would turn it around that it is our spiritual nature to appreciate others, acknowledge others, to listen to others, to be of service to others. That's why people say, what you want, you should give. You want love, give love. It's this understanding that there is only one of us, that we are intimately connected like this, that motivates the goodness within us. We want to be appreciated, so appreciate others. We want to be acknowledged, acknowledge others. Those things that we want in ourselves, we should know for sure others want just as much. And then offer that as support, as nourishment to others. And that group interaction that we thirst for so much will just naturally occur. Because we are fulfilling the requirements of another person to feel comfortable with us. Because the other will perceive the obvious way in which we are nourishing them. And they will feel very comfortable with us. This is the fundamental principle of creating a compatible group. If everybody is focused towards some leader or some god or whatever, and is not concerned with the others, that group cannot last. Because the requirements for the interaction within the group are not met. It does not matter what that group is. Every single group that exists, every single religion, every single political party, every single academic community has the same exact problem. Every group of artists, every group of musicians, everybody, even criminals, have the same exact problem. And that problem is that when we wish to have an interaction which we appreciate, we have to offer ourselves in the way that others wish us to associate with them. To actually feel this way is a very deeply spiritual principle. This way I mean of being of service, of being acknowledging others, of associating in that way. This deep realization that our personal interest lies outside of us as much as it lies within us is a very important point. That our deep appreciation of others, our deeply acknowledging others, even their right to think differently about something, and still we can appreciate them, is a very essential point. You may not want to be together with certain others for various reasons. But still, if you offer to them these essential respectful dealings, you can go far in this world. Obviously, this is not a very simplistic point. This is a complex point. It's a point which requires a lot of depth and a lot of awareness. But it is very important. Let's say, for instance, you are a person who doesn't like to smoke, and you have to be around others who do smoke, you will naturally, because of this physiological reaction, avoid them. But if you're thinking, this person is a horrible person because they are smoking, they're just disgusting and blah, 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 that's one way to think. Another way to think is, they're not very aware of how they are destroying themselves, and I wonder why they do like that. You know, when you have a situation where someone you love starts to pick up a habit which you really can't stand, all of your values are tested. You can have all these values that you don't want this to be, you don't want that to be, but when your daughter or your son or someone you love starts doing that very thing, your whole value structure comes into such a stress, you have to deal with it. Some deal with it by just rejecting that person. Others realize that I can't, they're my blood. I have to deal with it, I have to understand it, I have to somehow support them and help them. Every parent has to go through this as their beautiful young baby grows up to be a teenager. When those teenager years hit, so much of that love is tested. Another one of my cousins who has 3 or 4 kids told me, kids test you down to every last bit of your energy. They know your weaknesses perfectly well and they push you on them. Teenagers can't just, they know exactly how to just stake out their place. That means make their space. And every parent is tested to the max and has to come to this point of, shall I accept it or shall I reject it or what do I do? So simply being a parent is a valuable evolutionary step by which one has to learn how to appreciate, how to accept, how to support, how to nourish others. One has to do this with pets. One has to do this with plants. One has to do this with all living entities. And it seems to me that in all of my experience with people, the interactivity, the interactions between people is the main problem of all problems. Because we try to have social interactions, we try to have groups, we try to have connections, and yet we always end up in conflict which somehow starts to dominate our lives, even in our marriages and our homes. And the only way to avoid this is to live in solitude. But nobody can tolerate that for long. And then I start to wonder, I think that this task is the major spiritual task, because no one can avoid it. It's such a fundamental evolutionary task that no matter where you turn, you can't avoid it. Even if you go into the spiritual group with this idea that I'm going to avoid all material problems, this one hits you right in the face, 2 fists. So, it seems to me that this problem is the real problem. Okay, there's millions of other problems in this world, but this problem is one you just can't get away from. So, if I were to pin down some principle upon which I could describe a discipline, it would be in this realm, in the way in which we accept each other, that we acknowledge each other, the respect for others, the support for others, the way in which we can nourish others, the way in which we can really be there and be of service when it is required. Because when we get to that state that we have such a confidence in ourselves as people, that we can just offer ourselves in that way without fear, we have made a very big evolutionary step. Because included in that is to be without demands. Because if you are respecting, appreciating, acknowledging, you don't have demands that others must follow. You don't have expectations that they must fulfill. Of course, we're talking about adults now. When you're a parent, it's a different situation because you have a dependent. And you have to do your best to make sure the dependent grows and develops so that they will be able to independently live a very productive and peaceful and prosperous and happy life. But just think, if you wish to be of service to others, nobody has to demand it of you. It flows from you. If you are spiritually evolved as a person, people don't have to have these expectations of you because of these things that you are and you offer just flow from you. And because others do not have to demand or expect from you, you also should offer them the respect of not demanding and expecting from them. Which means that that which is offered, that which is done, that interaction is born of love, of free will. And that fundamental basis of love and free will is the way in which God deals with us. And this is that quality that we should focus on more. This way in which love flows. The reason I'm explaining this is because it's the fundamental, not doing this is the fundamental cause of the destruction of all community. And when one practices this very fundamental understanding, it can cause any community to be a tight-knit network of people who are very powerful. I saw in the way in which our installation took place there in St. Petersburg, I mean, it wasn't planned so deeply, and yet it fell into place and was a very beautiful thing because of the way in which everybody dealt with each other. And the way the individuals gave of themselves in relationship to others. It was just a very nice thing. So, when you have this capacity, even if there are problems, even if there are disturbances or difficulties, you can work it out. Whatever difficulty is there that has to be overcome, you can find a way to do it. Therefore, I cannot emphasize enough the need of community, yet at the same time, the need of the members in the community to be very highly evolved personalities. Now, someone may say, rightfully so, okay, not a bad point, but most people are not such evolved persons. And therefore, there has to be a very strict program and method to make them so. Therefore, we need rules and we need regulations and we need processes and we need ways of thinking and ways of doing. Maybe and maybe not. Maybe that's good for a certain time. But at a certain point, it becomes counterproductive. Let's take, for instance, the way in which a human being starts their life from when they are born and goes through their lives. At birth, totally dependent. In childhood, up until the time of going to school, totally needing to be there with mother. In school, teachers and strict structures and so on. And at one point in adulthood, they have to make it on their own, Otherwise, we think there's something wrong with them. Nobody's very happy with a child who stays home their whole life. We expect them to leave home. So we can understand that it is part of the evolution of a human being to go through a stage of having to learn how things are done and to follow somebody else's way of doing things until we manage to figure it out on our own and move forward. So there is a need for, spiritually as well, the development of a living entity through various disciplines. Spiritually as well. There is a need spiritually as well to be within the structures of disciplines for that initial growth and protection. But at one point in adulthood, one has to do it outside of that very specific structure. So I suppose my answer to that person who was demanding the continuation of this would be that, hey, I'm dealing with you as adults, and I don't feel inclined to place upon you the same restrictions that you needed, perhaps, when you were younger. You know, after all, we've been through this many lifetimes. Many lifetimes we've been in these various disciplines in one form or another. Therefore, I'd like to bring out that principle again that makes it work in adulthood. This respect for others, this appreciation for others, this acknowledgement for others, this ideal of being there for others, being of service for others, supporting and nourishing them, which will allow groups to work together, groups to develop, which will have a great power. This question is about the fact that people have trouble receiving, that people are able to give, but they're having a difficult time in receiving. Now, how would we consider that? How would we deal with that? What would be the means by which we would be able to best transform our inability to receive? It's quite possible that people who have a difficulty in receiving are people who have a very low self-esteem. They're people who feel that the only way they can justify their existence is to give to others. That somehow or another, by constantly sending out energy from them, love or service or whatever, they can avoid having to deal with everything that is within them that is giving them trouble. This is often the case. It's not just the case for some people. It's often the case for almost all people. It is something that we deal with because of the way we are. It is something we have to deal with is because of the way we feel, the way we have learned through our lives, through our histories. And because of this, we have this deep feeling within us that we're not good enough, coming from so many situations where we have failed to meet others' expectations or our own expectations or some external standards. So we have developed a lot of experience which makes us feel that our failures indicate there's something wrong with us. And because there's something wrong with us, we have to assume we're not good enough, we're just not worthy. And because we are not worthy, we cannot receive, because to receive from others, to receive gifts from others, we feel we have to be worthy of the gift. So we become worthy, we think, by just constantly giving, 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 and in this way we build up points. And by building up these points, we become more and more qualified to be able to someday be able to receive. But somehow or another, that day doesn't seem to come. And naturally, of course, the reason for that is because this is not the way to become worthy. The fact of our worthiness or not, I mean, or this, shall we say, the creation of the situation where we have become worthy is not dependent on these points. Every spirit is worthy. Every living entity is worthy. Every single personality is worthy. No human being is disposable. All of us are able to accept and to give and to receive in a very reciprocal and meaningful manner. It is therefore basically our own incapacity to accept ourselves that is the cause of our feeling of unworthiness. And until we accept ourselves, no amount of activity which is going to give us so many points, no amount of praise from others, no amount of anything from the exterior world is going to change that. There's only one way to get that worthiness, and that is to accept ourselves. And people think, I can't accept myself because I'm not good enough. We never said you have to be good enough to accept yourself. You simply have to accept what you are right now and just respect that. After all, what you are now is the product of a long period of your evolution. And therefore, we should respect the difficulties we have gone through, the troubles we have gone through to attain that situation. Accepting yourself does not mean you stop all evolution, that now you think you're fine and you stop all evolution. First of all, you cannot stop your evolution because evolution cannot be stopped. And second of all, when you accept yourself, you actually have the greater chance to evolve. Acceptance of yourself is a part of the evolutionary process. And also accepting that you are an integral part in this relationship that you have with others, and therefore you give and you receive. Now, there are some people who like to take from others as the way in which they justify their worthiness. They prove that they're worthy. They manifest that by demanding and taking from others. But we're not talking about that class of person. That person needs to evolve much more. Or perhaps that person is just having a bad lifetime. You know, like sometimes we have a bad day. So when we have this situation where we can give, we want to give, and we use this as a means to make us ourselves worthy, we have to sit back, relax, and just accept ourselves. Because when we come to that platform, our relationships with others will be very much more comfortable, more natural, and much closer to the standards, or shall we say, the perfections of love. I have a comment from another personality in question where it says that that sometimes when one is in this situation, one gives the best of oneself and receives the worst from others. I find this a very fascinating twist on this, where one thinks oneself so unworthy to receive that one feels that one should be beaten by others as a punishment for one's unworthiness and bad qualities. So they're busy giving away to others everything and receiving from them pain in this way, thinking this is helping themselves get purified and to develop. This is specifically a human quality. You don't find this quality in other species of life. Because we are so complex, we are so difficult in our minds, and we twist things so expertly that we are so able to say that we're so bad that others should punish us. We should just give and give and give and receive difficulty. But real love depends on sharing, and sharing has a certain kind of equality to it, or a certain kind of balance to it. And it's important that we realize that unless we are able to receive, How are we going to render service to others? Think of your own mentality. You want to give. But if the person you're giving to can't receive, isn't that frustrating? Therefore, if you really want to render service to others, you should receive what they are sending to you, that loving thing. You can't be a good gift giver unless you're a good gift receiver. And one who can't receive often will subconsciously send their negative qualities out because that's the way they really think of themselves. This really deep idea, I'm not good enough and therefore I can't receive, also causes the emanation from you of this not good part of you. And therefore, we aren't able to connect with God because we just don't know how to receive. Our whole point is to just give to God, give, 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 and we don't know how to receive. So, giving and taking, receiving and giving, these things are required. This is the way in which we establish our human interaction. And it is very important for us to respect others' need for us to receive. It is very important for us to acknowledge the gift from others and to appreciate it. Who wants to be with a person who rejects that which you offer to them? And if you reject it, not because you don't like it or that you don't like the person, but you don't like yourself, that is ridiculous. Because the person who is feeling that rejection will always take it personally because they usually have the same problem. So this is how we end up feeling so much rejection, so much frustration in our lives. So what's the best solution to this? To acknowledge, to accept, to appreciate that which others are giving, others are sending out into the world. However, this requires a little bit of mixture with behaviorism. You don't acknowledge and appreciate and reinforce the negative energy somebody is giving, but actually the positive in them. You look beyond the negative energy a person puts out because of their feeling of worthiness, and you see the good within them. And by seeing the good within them, you encourage it, you reinforce it. You are, in essence, telling them it's okay to be good. It's okay to be that part of you, which actually is very good. And in fact, that's a very good thing. And the more they can experience that security of manifesting their goodness and not being rejected because of it, the more they will grow into that goodness. I mean, it's just amazing if you think about the political conflicts in this world. They are, to a large extent, based upon this rejection of one to another and the other's intolerance, an inability to accept that rejection. And don't forget, the more you label somebody something, the more you push them into such a box, the more they have no choice but to act that way. So the solution is to reinforce the good and neglect to respond to the bad. And the more you do that, the better it is. And I hope that this discussion has been useful today. As far as I feel, I think this is... I feel that spirituality without connection to the human part of life is rather incomplete. And I feel that this form of interaction is the real discipline of life. And I think that this discipline is the real activity that needs to be done right now in the world. Because it is that which enables, empowers growth on a very widespread level. And I'd like to thank you all for being with us today, and I hope that this has helped any one of us, any of you, in whatever way I can. And I wish you all good health, especially nowadays, especially over there in Moscow with that flu going around. And goodbye and good luck. And we're going to play some music and take care of the realities of life.